U.S. factory activity slowed.
Based on hitting a shareholder value as market capitalization.
A lot more global. So creating more programming not only for, you know, us here in the English-speaking U.S.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, and 720 WGN.
Good afternoon, Chicago. I'm Elise Blink. It is Friday, the Wintrust Business Lunch. Steve Bertrand is still off enjoying his, I think, Irish trip. He's in Ireland this week. So I'm here, delighted to be here today. We've got a great show for you. You can find me at bestmoneymoves.com or connect through thinklink.com, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, all the other ways that we play on social here at WGN Radio. Andrea Haines, who is the markets editor of the Chicago Tribune, is sitting in the studio with me Friday. Lots of great stuff. Andrea, welcome.
Thanks, Elise. Great to be here.
It's nice to have you back. So I just had to laugh because when Bill and Wendy were saying, what's on the show? And I'm like, drug delivery by drone. Need we say more?
I know. It's happening. It's happening.
I can't even imagine this. So tell us a little bit about what you've discovered.
So this involves Walgreens and a Google affiliate, which is known as Wing Aviation. And they have been experimenting a little bit with some drone deliveries in Virginia. So now Walgreens is pairing up with them to do a little test of delivering items by drone.
So do we really want to have drones doing drug delivery at 70 miles an hour flying around in the city? I mean, this just sounds crazy to me. How is that going to work with, like, the FAA?
Yeah, I think if you're homesick, you might think it was a great idea, right? So right. This is a small test in a very small town, mm-hmm. So we don't have to worry about it, like, out this beautiful window here just yet. But in Christiansburg, Virginia, they're going to be trying this. And there's a limited list of items you can order. It's about 100 items. They do stress that it's stuff that could help with things like coughs and colds. But at the start, it won't necessarily be prescription drugs. Maybe you'll get your over-the-counter, you know, your DayQuil and your Kleenex and your orange juice by drone.
Okay, so we're not getting into the good stuff yet. Is there a weight limit? Is there a number of items limit?
There is. So they're moving about, they're saying like around 3 pounds, and the aircraft itself is only 10 pounds. So in the eyes of the people doing the delivery, that's a really efficient way to move goods, right? You don't have a truck coming to your house. You have a little tiny drone.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how this really takes off. It reminds me of an Amazon Go store, right? There's just a limited number of things. You go in, you go out, and you know, and this is all you can get, but this comes to your door, which is better. Nobody wants to leave their houses.
Yep, and it's a small test, but it is a sign of what's going on with, you know, with Amazon, with UPS. They're all racing to deliver us things, and companies like Walgreens and CVS want to be in on that.
You know, it's funny. I used to sort of think, well, why can't people just get up and go get stuff? Like, you know, food, for example. I get the drugs. You're sick in bed, and there's nobody else to go to the drugstore. And, you know, that's one thing. And they do. Most of the drugstores now have delivery services as well. And there's many different ways to get this stuff. It's just interesting how much to the point of delivery we're getting. Fascinating. There was another story that you had this week. A food tech startup that has a way to keep your avocados from going brown. And I thought, this is something I need, and it's not just for avocados. What about bananas?
Yeah, it's cool. We actually talked about it a while back, but it wasn't in stores yet. And now, as of Wednesday, it is in stores in Illinois, and it will be rolling out to more, including Chicago, soon. So this is a new technology. It's basically a coating that extends the life of avocados, and they're going to be doing some tests soon on other things like asparagus. I don't know when they'll get to bananas, though.
Asparagus. I don't know that asparagus, well, maybe it goes bad. I don't really buy asparagus too much, but when I think about avocados, it's interesting. Is this coating, and today is a day that everybody around the world is really focused on the environment and environmental protection. Is this coating something that would be negative or harmful some way?
It doesn't look like it. It's really made from almost like plant waste products, and it's quite the opposite. At least their argument is it will actually save resources because it will prevent quite a lot of food waste by basically doubling the life of an avocado. And it also, in some cases, as with asparagus, it can help with how fast it needs to be transported. And that can mean not having to ship it by plane, which has a bigger environmental footprint. So in ways like that, it may help with avoiding waste of various kinds.
So the company is called Apeel, A-P-E-E-L. I love the pun. Is it available online today? Is it just in some of these stores? When is it going to be coming here? Do you know?
The way it works is it's the retailer, so like your Kroger store, your Mariano's store, like they apply this coating. It is as of...
So we don't have to buy it and apply it.
Right. You don't have to buy it as a consumer. It comes when you buy the product. So you can buy them at some stores in Illinois now and coming soon to Chicago.
All right. And then the last story I wanted to get to is this idea that Amazon is going to build 100,000 custom electric delivery vans at its Illinois factory in 2020. The company is Rivian. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Uh-huh.
And... tell us a little bit about, you know, there seems to be something sort of interesting. I mean, we're going to build these trucks here. We've got Uber that's going to put its, you know, 2,000 jobs. Most of it is in the freight delivery world here in Chicago. You know, are we becoming this kind of transportation hub again?
Yeah, you know, Chicago is a great logistics hub in a lot of ways, and it always has been for many reasons. With Rivian, they took over a Mitsubishi plant downstate, so they're located in a number of different areas and their headquarters is elsewhere, but they will be building a lot of vehicles downstate in Normal. And they're not actually producing vehicles yet, but they've been around for about 10 years developing what will be these sort of sustainable electric trucks. And as of this week, it was announced that Amazon is also an investor in Rivian, and
right.
they have ordered 100,000 custom, basically vans. They'll be electric vans that will be custom built for Amazon and do deliveries.
Well, it's kind of nice, again, for this whole environmental day and week that we're experiencing and people protesting. I mean, announcing electric vans is still a better thing than having gas-guzzling vans, I think.
Yeah, Amazon is trying to be quicker with getting some of its, you know, its sort of carbon zero emissions. They're trying to do that actually 10 years earlier, which would be by 2040, a decade ahead of the Paris Climate Accord, which, as you know, the U.S. has dropped out of, at least for now. But some of these companies are trying to push to make improvements.
When you just said 2040, I was trying to mentally calculate how old I'll
be here.
And I was terrified, and I thought, I'm not going there right now. Andrea Haines, markets editor of the Chicago Tribune. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Glink from Best Money Moves, sitting in for Steve Bertrand today. He'll be back, I think, on Monday. And he's having a great time. You can follow him on Facebook and see all the pictures of his trip. It's pretty cool. We've got Mehul Patel, CEO of Hired.com, with us on the line right now. And he has just released the Top Places to Work, which is a really amazing thing. Mehul, welcome to the program.
Good to be here, Elise.
It's nice to have you. So tell us a little bit about the top places to work, because let's start with what went into figuring out who has a top place to work.
Yeah, so Hired is the leading recruitment platform for tech workers, particularly software engineers and data scientists, all the people sort of powering today's innovation economy. And what we do, we have thousands of these workers, and what we do periodically is survey them. And what we've been doing the last couple of years is this brand health report. And the brand health report looks at workers in 14 of our markets around the world, including Chicago, and asks them which companies they'd love to work for and like to work for. We collate that. We surveyed over 3,000 engineers, data scientists, and product managers for this report and came out with our top employer brands in Chicago.
All right. So what are they? Because I know not all of the brands that you survey, for example, Airbnb is based in San Francisco. I don't think they have a presence here in Chicago, or if they do, it's teeny. But what are the companies that are here that you looked at that people like to work at?
Yeah, that's right. So we actually had two levels of the survey. One was a local market survey, and that was Chicago-centric. And then we looked at companies that were more national, international, and that's where you saw Airbnb. In Chicago, the top three were Grubhub, Braintree, and Groupon. What's notable there is that Grubhub and Groupon have been on the list now for the second year in a row that we've been doing this. Braintree is actually a new entrant into the top 10, which is showing some really good momentum.
So what I thought was interesting about this is the top five are rounded out by what I would call not old school kinds of industries, but United Airlines being number four and Discover Financial Services number five, both companies that have been around for a long time.
Yeah. So, you know, we think every company is a tech company now. Every company, whatever industry you're in, whether you're in transportation like United or financial services like Discover, they need to hire tech talent. And so ultimately, everyone is competing for tech talent, and it's great to see, you know, more established companies in different industries be seen as having strong tech employer brands.
So the last company that is on the list for Chicago is a company called Vivid Seats, and I have to say I've never heard of them. What are they?
Yeah, so Vivid Seats, first appearance on our top 10 list, a smaller company. But again, this reflects the fact that we're surveying engineers, and some of them will want to go to bigger companies like Grubhub, maybe even established companies like United, and some of them will want to go to fast-growing newer companies like Vivid.
So what is it that makes these companies attractive? I've been to the Grubhub. I've toured the Grubhub downtown headquarters. It's a terrific old building here in Chicago that's, I think people thought was kind of a warehouse, and it's been just remade, and it's very cool and hip, and there's a lot of food all over the place, as you'd expect with Grubhub, right? But what is it, besides maybe free food, that attracts engineers and software people to this space, to these companies?
Yeah, so that's an excellent question, Elise. You know, the thing is, it really hasn't changed. It's really, really three factors. One is fair compensation. People aren't picking the place for the highest compensation, but they want to be paid fairly. The second is culture, which you're talking about a little bit there in terms of just kind of office space and feel. But it's really more about the ability to sort of be in an environment that shares your values, that's a mission you care about. And then the third is really around sort of work flexibility. We're seeing more and more, and this is particularly notable in Chicago, that, you know, two-thirds of the people we surveyed in Chicago, the engineers we surveyed, wanted to work 100% remotely. And so companies that can accommodate kind of how the modern worker wants to work will also win.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch all of the company cultures begin to revolve around the employee again after years of just being focused on, I don't know, investors, perhaps. And not that investors aren't important, they are, but employees are certainly at the center of these things.
Well, yeah, that's exactly right. Talent creates success for companies, and then that's all good for investors and stakeholders. So it starts with talent. I think you're absolutely right. These companies begin to realize it's about being able to hire and retain the best talent.
So if you want to look at the rest of these lists, and they are pretty interesting, and see how Chicago stacks up and maybe the company that you work for stacks up or would like to work for, you can go to Hired.com. Mehul Patel, CEO of Hired.com, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Happy Friday, everybody. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Steve Bertrand today on the Wintrust Business Lunch. You can find me at bestmoneymoves.com or thinklink.com. Happy to talk to you about money all day long. But right now, what we want to talk about is women in the music industry. And Agnes Horvat is the assistant professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Northwestern University. She joins us on the line. She's got a new study. Is that right? Agnes, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you for having me. That's right.
So, you know, I think about women in the music industry, and there are a whole bunch of names that come to mind, mostly Queen Bey, right? Beyonce.
Mm-hmm.
But your study found that that isn't really reality, just these few women here or there. I mean, there's a lot of other men who are actually are sort of play a bigger role in song creation, music creation. Tell us a little bit about that.
Certainly. So, obviously, as you said, we see many high-profile female musicians, and that's great. However, when we looked at 40 years' worth of data covering the U.S. and Western Europe mostly, so Western popular music, then we see that on average, a female artist has far lower chances for making it in the industry, and that means constant release of songs and also constant collaborations with other artists that could improve their standing in the industry. So we see that overall, women are underrepresented.
What happens, though, over the last 5 to 10 years, or maybe even 10 to 20 years? I can understand 40 years ago, women being less represented. Are we seeing a trend line that at least suggests maybe we're coming into parity?
Well, parity seems to be still very far away. So we do see an increase from maybe 20 to 25% roughly in the percentage of female musicians, solo musicians recording albums, but that's far from 50%, I would say.
What would you say is the optimal sort of 50-50 perhaps is optimal, but in terms of getting women to be more recognized, more dialed in, it feels to me that the music industry is very insular and that a lot of this stuff happens because of who you know, kind of the way women get on boards, right? It's who you know.
Mm-hmm. So our study focused on two aspects that relate to that particular question, one of them being the record labels. So they are the main gatekeepers. If you cannot record your music, then you are basically pushed out of the industry. And we saw that over a 40-year time period, so in specifically between the 60s and 2000, there were a little bit less than 5,000 record labels in our data set. Nearly all of them worked with women, with men, and then less than one-third of them have ever signed a woman, at least one. So this is, of course, then a huge barrier because women probably have to move to closer to hubs where there are more record labels, in specific those that that are willing to work with them as well. And then the other factor is the collaboration network. So if you know a well-known artist and you are able to work together with them, then that will, of course, open up new opportunities. And when we look at the collaboration network, who works with whom, then we see that female musicians collaborate with fewer other musicians. And when we draw this network of collaborations, then we see that they are rather at the periphery. So they are not exposed to as many ideas and as many opportunities as the majority of male colleagues.
It's so interesting, the ability to self-publish today, both, you know, self-publishing books, and so the mm-hmm. you know, book industry has been hit. Self-publishing music, I'm thinking like young recording artists like Billie Eilish, who I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that correctly, mm-hmm. who has come out of nowhere but built on YouTube and through her online mm-hmm. work an enormous following in a very short period of time.
Yes.
Is she the harbinger of the future? Is this something that we should be celebrating?
So we should celebrate every female success, I'd say. Based on this data, we see that it's very unlikely. However, the viral campaigns that we see and that we like to talk about are extremely rare. So that's, again, a solution for the very few who with some trick and with some luck, make it to the top through that strategy. But the industry itself is not going to be sustainable via that model. So the study tells us that what we would need to reflect on are the challenges faced by female musicians, because if you are not able to record your music, if you are not able to get the visibility that you would need to be present on the music scene, then you are not going to be able to make ends meet, and then it is unlikely that you will stay in the industry. So the dropout rate for female musicians is also considerably higher.
So what is it? I know you're not really in the recommendation business, you're in the advice business, but you know, if you're looking at this and you see you've identified these issues, this collaboration issue and the lack of the ability to actually record, record label affiliation, how would you advise women who want to be in the music industry to break in? Where are the opportunities for them? And, you know, how hard do you push? Because we know that women who push hard, there's a lot of pushback still. Mm-hmm. So where do you go?
So that's, I would say, still a matter of future research. So part of the next steps is that we try to identify a female way of producing music that could help women advance despite these barriers. And, of course, we are hoping that some of these barriers will not be there or not to this extent in 5 to 10 years. Nevertheless, some of our algorithms are, and this is work in progress, so I cannot give you definite answers here, but are targeted at finding, okay, what strategies did those successful women apply? How so find the commonalities between enough cases that we could should generalize so that we are not looking at just the top of the top, so at the very, very, very popular female musicians.
Well, we look forward to getting some more of the results back of this. It sounds like this next phase of the research and getting that advice and help out to the women who are trying to break into the industry. Agnes Horvat is assistant professor in the Department of Communication Studies at Northwestern University. Thanks for sharing your research today.
Oh, I thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Coming up, the stories that matter with Jen DeSalvo from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So the last time you stayed at a hotel on vacation, was it just too loud, too cramped, or too touristy? That's one of the reasons why they created Airbnb. And if you've never heard of Airbnb, you might be living under a rock. They rent out apartments, condos, and homes under the category of home sharing. And if you're a fan, then you might like to hear that the company is planning on going public in 2020. Airbnb has an office in Chicago and has also been a very helpful testing ground for them to progress forward as a company. Chicago city regulations have created a number of hurdles for them to overcome, but they've navigated them successfully and they've come a long way since introducing the service back in 2008. But you know, we all can't be big-time Airbnb-level companies or Michelin star-rated restaurants. So Michelin shared their list of Chicago restaurants that they respect and think are well worth a visit while missing out on the official list. They call it the Bib Gourmand for 2020. Some of the ones in Chicago are Cabra in the West Loop, Daisy's in Logan Square, the Duck Inn in Bridgeport, and Birrieria Zaragoza in Archer Heights. So check them out. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's 12:53. I'm Elise Kling, sitting in for Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for joining me this Friday. We've got Joe Cahill from Crane Chicago Business. He's the business columnist on the phone with us right now to chat. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Elise.
Nice to have you here.
Good to be here.
Happy Friday. So
same to you.
You know, smoking dope. I mean, there's no other way to say it. We've been talking about drug delivery all day today, I think. But you've got a story today that Mayor Lightfoot is thinking of excluding a big swath of the downtown area from potential marijuana sales. What's up with that?
Yeah, well, the mayor earlier this week announced the areas that would have licenses for legal recreational marijuana sales, and she's not going to allow any stores in an area of the Central Business District from Congress all the way up to the river, and then north of the river, everything basically from the lake across to LaSalle Street and up to Oak Street is going to be off limits to recreational marijuana shops as well.
What's the thinking there? Because, you know, clearly when I go to downtown Denver, for example, it's everywhere. You've got on every corner, sometimes several places that you can actually purchase marijuana and marijuana products. Same thing is true with Los Angeles and many, many other cities.
Yeah, well, she's effectively excluding the biggest potential market in the city for recreational marijuana sales. In this area, you know, you've, at any given time, you've got 500,000 or more people there between residents, commuters, and tourists, you know, walking up and down Michigan Avenue with money in their pockets. The residents in that area are among the wealthiest in the city, so they've got plenty of money to spend, too. And then, of course, you've got people coming in from all points of the compass, including a lot of suburban urbanites who the mayor has previously kind of wagged her finger at as free riders on city services and talked about taxing them. Well, here's an opportunity to get some tax money out of them, and she's passing it up.
Okay, but so why? Do we have any indication why?
Well, one of the mayoral underlings kind of put out a flimsy rationale on public safety grounds that the area is, you know, too crowded and congested. But that's actually a reason why you ought to have sales there.
And, I mean, are you thinking that it's crowded and congested and so nobody is drinking or smoking pot now? Because I can say, Mayor, that's not true.
But more likely the rationale stems from the equity agenda that Lightfoot is putting forward. She wants to make sure that economic development comes to a lot of outlying neighborhoods that haven't enjoyed the kind of boom that we've seen in the Central Business District, and that makes a lot of sense. But excluding marijuana sales from the downtown area is not going to make any marijuana retailer more likely to locate in those neighborhoods. If she really wanted to incentivize that, she should say to companies, well, you can have a downtown license as long as you also open a store in an outlying neighborhood.
Yeah, that's a great, easy solution that would double the amount of production. And certainly, there's a lot of it. Nobody's saying that there isn't a lot of need in some of the other neighborhoods. I'm sure there is. But it seems to me that if we want to take advantage of tourism and travelers from far fields, as you put it, downtown would be key to that.
Yep.
Is she also excluding places like Navy Pier?
Well, that would seem to be the case because the exclusion zone does go all the way to the lake. I mean, Navy Pier is out in the lake, I guess, but that would certainly appear to be the case, yeah.
Well, I'm sure you're going to follow up on that and have more to come. Where can we find out more, by the way?
At chicagobusiness.com.
All right, that sounds pretty easy. Joe, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Elise.